I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. Last month, SunRail extended their evening weekday service. The change comes after a public clamour for additional service on the commuter rail line, which is still in its first year of operation. Now there's a push for weekend service too. Dan Tracy, who's the Orlando Sentinel transportation reporter, David Porter, publisher of SunRailRiders.com, and Erica Spence from the Winter Park Chamber of Commerce join me to talk about the impact of extended service on SunRail and the costs of future expansion. A panel discussion about SunRail in its first year of operation, that's ahead on Intersection. I'm joined in the studio by Dan Tracy. Dan is a reporter with the Orlando Sentinel. He covers transportation. Dan, thanks for coming in.
Sure.
Also joined by David Porter. He runs the online publication SunRailRiders.com. David, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And we're joined by Erica Spence too. She's the Senior Director of Marketing Communication for the Winter Park Chamber of Commerce. Erica, thanks for coming along.
It's a pleasure.
Well, let's talk about SunRail and their extended hours. So they've decided to extend their hours of service on weekdays. The last train now stops in DeBarry at 11:23. Dan, if you could just give us the big picture here, how did transportation leaders kind of move to extend the service? Because this was something that was talked about at the start of SunRail, but there was questions about when this would actually happen. Why did they move to do this now?
Well, they've always been concerned about money. And so the notion was is that they would try and keep their costs at a minimum. So they went to a very truncated schedule. And then the first 2 weeks of SunRail opened, and they were just inundated, overwhelmed with people. And so there was some talk about it even then. And then, over time, I think that the people started to say, we'd like to see more service. And then people like David got involved, and I think that made a big difference. And then the holidays came along, and they thought, well, let's roll the dice and see what happens. And so far, it's worked out well.
Mm-hmm. Is there, is there kind of a catch-22 in that they don't have a lot of money to start off with, so there's a limit to what they can do service-wise, but then there's this question of how do you make sure that there's the trains running off, that people actually see it as a viable option to take it? I mean, it seems like there's a bit of a problem there.
Oh, there is, and that's going to be the conundrum from always, because the fact is that no mass transit system pays for itself. SunRail is no exception. They're hoping to get maybe 20%, 25% if they're lucky, fares to pay for the overall operating expenses. That becomes a real lightning rod for people who don't like mass transit, people who are very car-centric and want to see roads. The obvious answer back to them is, well, how much money does State Road 50 generate?
Mm-hmm. There is talk, of course, of putting more toll roads in, so I guess that question might come up down the track. What about the cost of associated with this particular extension in time? I mean, is that going to pay for itself in terms of added ridership? Or
yeah, they got lucky this time. It's relatively cheap. It's only $340 fuel-wise round trip, and they were able to rearrange the schedules of the existing crews, so there was no cost there. And there's some hope that they can get somebody to underwrite this, the late night train, mm-hmm. maybe not the magic, but somebody like that, some people who would, use some advertising dollars to do that.
And what about sharing the line with CSX? Because that was one of the kind of puzzles they had to figure out as well. It's not just a transit-only freight line, rail line, rather.
Yeah, it's not just commuter. Well, what the deal is that they purchased the tracks and the corridor essentially from CSX several years ago, spent $150 million. And so what the deal was is that during the morning and evening peak rush hours, CSX couldn't be anywhere near the trains, near the tracks, so they're banned. And during the afternoon when they go to every two-hour schedule, CSX can put some trains on, and then late in the evening as well and into the early morning. And then, of course, Amtrak, I think, has six trains, and they share with them as well.
I'm happy you brought that up, because obviously that's one of the big things that people keep talking about. They say, oh, gee, I wish the trains ran until 3 o'clock in the morning so I could get drunk on Church Street and stumble on the train home. And I ran the petition campaign starting in July, mm-hmm. and that was a lot of the feedback that we got. Realistically speaking, I think that to this point, SunRail's done just about everything they can do within the existing agreement. I mean, because that train ends, like you said, almost 11:30 up in DeBary. Mm-hmm. So enough time to go ahead and get that train back to Sanford and get it off the main line. But it's a huge plus for people who want to do, I guess they're calling kind of leisure, you know, riding of the train, that you can go out, you know, to dinner to places like Winter Park and Lake Mary and Sanford and have a nice dinner and still be able to, you know, ride the train back home, back to your home station. I've never envisioned and never been a fan of this idea of some type of a rolling drunk tank at 3 o'clock in the morning, because it creates all kinds of problems for the conductors and security and just all kinds of things like that. So mm-hmm. I think realistically and just to, you know, financially, to argue to do something like that, I'm from New York City. This is not New York City. New York City has a subway that runs all night long, but that's not where we are. So if we can just get it, you know, keep this running to 11:30, you know, midnight, I think that's plenty for Central Florida for at least the rest of my working lifetime.
Mm-hmm. So David Porter, you've spent a fair bit of time riding SunRail mm-hmm. since it started mm-hmm. in 2014. What are riders saying about this extended service? Have you had a chance to kind of talk to other folks on the train and sound them out?
Well, riders love it, but, you know, remember, the other thing the riders really want to see, because the petition campaign that we ran that got, you know, something like 3,500 signatures, they wanted to see extended, you know, nighttime service, and they also wanted to see service on the weekends. So the people who I've spoken to, the feedback that I've gotten, that they're very excited about the evening service, but they still want to see the weekend piece happen, you know, mm-hmm. as well. And in terms of, you know, Dan was talking before about possibly somebody helping to sponsor this thing and stuff like that. There was a Collier's report that I saw recently about retail marketing, and they just talked about the impact that had in downtown Orlando. SunRail, the downtown development, stuff like that, made a significant bump in the third quarter, and I'm sure that, you know, that same experience was borne out, you know, in the Winter Park area. Winter Park, quite frankly, has been a huge, you know, beneficiary of SunRail in general, and I'm guessing, you know, nighttime SunRail, you know, as well. So it's mm-hmm. it means a lot. It's part of the economic engine of this community right now, I think.
We can talk to Erica about the impact on Winter Park in just a moment, but just before we do that, mm-hmm. I want to ask you one further question there, David, about you know, how this came about, now this extended service. I mean, you talk about your petition there getting mm-hmm. quite a few signatures, but what about that Black Friday drive as well? That was a crowded day. That was like a holiday, which yeah. the SunRail was actually riding. Was that kind of key in getting people extend the service?
That's what I believe. I mean, I'm not inside the heads of the people who, you know, who made that decision, but what I was trying to do with that event by promoting that whole thing to ride that Black Friday was to show that there are a lot of people, a lot of places you can go besides work, mm-hmm. you know, on SunRail. And I think that helped to demonstrate, and that's what we said when we promoted it. Go to the kind of places that you would go to if you didn't have to ride SunRail to go to work. There are a lot of people, SunRail doesn't go any place near to their jobs, but if they were off, where they would go. So, you know, so there are people say, well, gee, I'd love to go to, you know, lunch in Winter Park and I have to worry about parking. I'd love to go to the Science Center. I'd love to come downtown, you know, Orlando. You know, even people who said I'd love to ride up to DeBary and get off of my bike and ride on some of those bike trails and everything that they have up there. So people were able to demonstrate how SunRail could actually work. So that's why I kind of called it a simulated Saturday. You know, mm-hmm. what would that be like? You know, it's not a pure experiment, but it helped demonstrate that. And I think that you saw that also reflected. Dan was the person who reported the numbers. I think you saw that reflected on January the 2nd. That was a similar type of day where there were a lot of people off for the holidays and decided to jump on the train. And as I recall, it was a number like 9,000 people mm-hmm. riding the train that day, which was like the biggest in terms of revenue. That was certainly the biggest revenue day or at least revenue-paying passengers that rode, because before the largest number was people riding for free. And it's like, mm-hmm. you know, people do anything for free.
Sure. So, Erica Spence, did you notice, was there any way of sort of measuring how many people had come into Winter Park, say, on Black Friday or even January 2nd and used SunRail? Like, was there any kind of tracking of how people got to Winter Park on that day?
We know that a significant number did come on SunRail. If you were near Central Park and the tracks, there were people waiting for the train. Sometimes they couldn't get on. They'd wait till the next train. Mm-hmm. Merchants had the biggest Black Friday they've had in a number of years. It was larger than Small Business Saturday. And if you know much about that movement, Small Business Saturday was built for places like Park Avenue and Winter Park. And our merchants had a very, very strong Friday.
Mm-hmm. Did the chamber have a hand, too, in lobbying SunRail to extend service?
We are very much in favor of extending service, both for our business community but also for our residents, so that they can go and experience things like the Dr. Phillips Center for Performing Arts and the Magic and other communities along the line.
What do you think would make the most difference to Winter Park? Would weekend service, or do you think it's what we've got now in terms of the extended nighttime service is enough of a boost?
Well, what we have now is great. The late night opportunity is wonderful, but I know that weekend service would make a difference, especially for families that want to come and spend time in the park, go to the farmer's market, have lunch. Those opportunities are missed, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
I know that a lot of the big businesses had a push to get employees involved, like passes for employees. Is that something that some of the smaller companies have been able to do as well, or is it not really an option?
Some small employees are doing other incentives. If they weren't able to do group passes, they'll do a circulator bus, or they'll go in together on things like that, or other rewards for riding the train but then taking your bike to work. Mm-hmm. Bike Walk Central Florida is a big part of Winter Park, getting people around.
Yeah. I guess the other thing, too, is we now have Bike Share rolling out that mm-hmm. launched this month.
In downtown Orlando.
Right. And Winter Park has been working on something similar?
We are working towards a Bike Share program. It's not – we don't have anything to announce, big mm-hmm. secret today, but it is something that we're working on and anticipating that being another avenue for people to get around the town.
How crucial is that? Because the last mile is something that transportation experts talk about. You know, you've got a train, then you've got to figure out a way for people to get from the train to where they want to go.
Mm-hmm. That last mile is very critical, especially when we talk about pedestrian safety in Winter Park, but in all of Central Florida. Mm-hmm. Better signalization at crosswalks and smarter pedestrians, smarter drivers being aware mm-hmm. of where people are coming from.
Smarter drivers. Speaking of that, Dan, Tracy, there have been some interactions between drivers and the train, shall we say. Do you think Central Florida drivers are getting the hang of having more frequent trains, not trying to get around the barriers?
I thought that for a while, but the other night we had another accident. And there's been 19 near misses, and that's basically when the engineer has to use the brakes. Mm-hmm. We did a little research a while back and looked at a number of different commuter trains that had started from the year 2000 up to now. And we found that basically Orlando has the second worst record of anybody. Only a place in Denton, Texas had more accidents than Orlando. There's a number of reasons. How many, how long is your system? You know, are they all that great, crossings and things like that? But the bottom line is that whenever you have a new system, you are going to have this problem. And, I talked to Highway Patrol, I've talked to OPD, and basically they all say the same thing. And it's just that people are impatient, and they think they can either beat the train or they don't realize that when they cross the tracks that the rear end of their car is still there. Mm-hmm. And that was caused, like, maybe two or three accidents right there.
Mm-hmm. It's a little troubling, though. I know that, Orlando doesn't have a great record for pedestrian or bicycle versus vehicle
safety anyway.
Accidents. Yeah. I mean, is it all part of that picture of the way people drive in the city?
It could be. I mean, everybody's different. I mean, one of the accidents, a guy actually hit the train, and he said, well, he couldn't see because of the sun was in his eyes. We had a woman that stalled her car on the tracks and couldn't – she had a standard transmission and didn't know how to use it, and so she couldn't get the car started. So, I mean, there are some extenuating circumstances, but I really think that, people just are in a hurry and they make – bad decisions.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. I'm speaking to Dan Tracy from the Orlando Sentinel, David Porter from SunRailRiders.com, and Erica Spence from the Winter Park Chamber of Commerce about the impact of SunRail's extended hours. You can join the conversation online on Facebook or send us a tweet at WMFE Orlando. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. I'm speaking with Orlando Sentinel transportation reporter Dan Tracy, SunrailRiders.com founder David Porter, and Erica Spence from the Winter Park Chamber of Commerce about the impact of Sunrail's extended hours and future expansion for Central Florida's commuter rail line. Erica, do you have a sense of how people in the Winter Park community responding to Sunrail in terms of maybe people who weren't so keen on having more trains coming through the city? Do you have any kind of information about how they're feeling about it now, sort of almost a year on?
I think you still have people on both sides of the fence. Quiet zones are a hot topic, and what that cost is to realize that kind of situation. But then I think you talk to the merchants or the folks at the Morse Museum, and they see new people coming to Winter Park that haven't come before. And these are seniors that are taking advantage of a Seniors on SunRail program. And that now all of a sudden a day trip to Winter Park and a visit to the Morse Museum is something that's attainable for them. We're seeing an increase in traffic from Volusia County, so regional tourism, which, mm-hmm. Was a little far for some folks to come. And that's been a welcome addition to Winter Park. We've had an influx in even tourists using the train coming. They'll be down in the celebration area. They'll drive up to the Sand Lake Station. Yeah. And it's a great addition to what we have as far as visitors to Winter Park or even families coming for the day.
Mm-hmm. What about connectivity down the line? Because there is talk, too, of getting a train to connect to the international airport.
That would be so fabulous. You wouldn't have to do the whole car thing or worry about where to park it or someone to pick you up. It's really just, down the street, get mm-hmm. on the SunRail station in Winter Park and get to the airport.
And we see a little bit of that right now because I'm right near the Sand Lake Road Station. The other day I was waiting for the train. And there was a guy who was I can't remember what airline, first officer, co-pilot mm-hmm. for a plane. He had his flight case and everything there. And it was great. And he lives in Volusia County, and he was going to DeBary, where somebody was going to pick him up and then continue the trip, to, I can't remember which city he actually lived in, but it saved somebody, the drive down or him leaving his car parked someplace, for some endless period of time until he got back. But you won't be able to fully realize that, again, until you get that 7 days so that, you can, coming back from vacation, you can. And I do see not just that pilot. I mean, that's just one example. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We see the people there from the TSA all the time who are just using it to commute. But I see other people with their luggage and stuff that came off the Lynx bus getting on the train and riding up to, Seminole County and stuff like that. Not tens of thousands, but, a noticeable number of them. But again, we just need to get that 7 days so you can make that fully part of that experience. Where mm-hmm. it's like in New York where you land at, Kennedy Airport and you have that train that you can then take from there to, to Manhattan. We need that kind of experience here.
Does your, as far as lobbying for rail service, do you kind of sometimes step outside the SunRail sphere and sort of look at other possible rail systems? Like, are you working on trying to get the city to build in some transportation to the airport from somewhere else?
Well, I've stepped outside of the system to look at, and Dan did this years ago. I just did this about a month ago. I did go down to South Florida to ride Tri-Rail, which is, I call that SunRail's big brother. And in many ways, it's almost like a carbon copy of SunRail, and was born the same way that they were doing a massive construction project on I-95 and needed that to mitigate some of the traffic. And so that was interesting to look at to see what SunRail would look like, 25 years down, down the road. Mm-hmm. On the website, we do support and we regularly kind of mention things like All Aboard Florida and even the initiative to try and build that maglev system between the airport and iDrive and the convention center. So, mm-hmm. So we're trying to, it's focused on SunRail, but SunRail works best when all those other things are working, links and all the other rail proposals and other things to provide alternatives. We just did a video the other day about the bike share program. Mm-hmm. All of that is part of the puzzle to making SunRail work.
Dan, David was talking about the I-95 project down in South Florida, which sort of helped the rail service down there. Do you see something similar happening with the I-4 Ultimate project here? Is that going to drive people off the road onto the train?
Absolutely. I mean, that was one of the impetus behind SunRail was to give people an alternative. And you're looking at 6 years at least of pretty massive disruption on Interstate 4 all through downtown, 21-mile corridor. And in fact, DOT is paying for the operations of SunRail for that period of time. But go back a second. You were talking about weekend service and the airport. There's two real big obstacles to that. Well, actually one, and it's money. To get to the airport, they've estimated it's going to be $100 million. To go to weekend service, basically go from 36 trains a day now to 40, and then throw in some weekend service that not nearly that big of a frequency, you would spend could spend up to $19 million in additional equipment and another $10 million in operating costs, and that's about a third, not quite a third, of what their operating costs are right now. So DOT is paying for what's here now. Mm-hmm. The question becomes, who's going to pay for that $100 million? Who's going to pay for that additional capital cost? Who's going to pay for the additional operating expenses going forward? And the cities, the counties that are you know, Orlando, Orange County, Seminole, those, they say they don't have the money. And the state says, well, we don't have the money. So, I mean, it's an logical place to go, but, you know, it comes back to money. Who's mm-hmm. going to pay for it and how?
So to kind of jump on that bandwagon as well, so we recently on our Facebook page, and this is not scientific or anything like that, but we just asked people recently, we said, would you be willing to pay more for SunRail service on the weekends? And it was pretty unanimous that they were willing to pay, you know, some amount. But going back to what Dan said, keep in mind that, you know, again, the fare box only pays for a fraction, you know, of mm-hmm. the cost. But I think my hope is that the politicians, seeing there is a willingness to by the riders to pay a little bit more, that may give them the courage or the creativity to find a way to make some of those, you know, some of those decisions, which you don't often see people saying we're willing to pay more. Our big concern is that if you charge more on the weekends, it needs to be done in a way that doesn't affect people who the weekends are part of their work week. They shouldn't mm-hmm. be penalized, you know, have to pay more because they happen to work on Saturday or Sunday. But I think the solution might be, you know, for those multi-day Sun cards that you charge, you know, the regular rate, and the people who are buying those single tickets to ride, that's where the hike would, you know, would be. But again, whatever the rate's going to be, it certainly wouldn't be enough to cover the whole thing, but maybe it would help out a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Just quickly, Dan, Tracy, this maglev system, do you see that ever getting off the ground? No pun intended.
There's a lot of skepticism in the transportation mm-hmm. community here and elsewhere about the viability of that operation. The fellows who are proposing it have proposed it in a couple other places, and it has not come to pass. They have a test track up in just outside of Atlanta. It's about a quarter of a mile, I believe, maybe a little bit longer. And it does run on that, but DOT, state officials, sent some people up to look at it after the proposal mm-hmm. was made, and I think I could characterize their assessment of it as not being real impressed. That said, who knows? Maybe they can do it.
Mm-hmm. Because that is one of the options for getting out to the airport. But are there other things that people are looking at? I mean, if it's not SunRail, if the $100 million cost is too high a bar, what else is there?
Well, that's really the question. I mean, that Maglev has proposed themselves and positioned themselves in that way, and that they would go from the airport, you know, to iDrive and those places. SunRail is talking about using the OUC coal line mm-hmm. that goes around the airport. And, of course, we know that coal eventually is not going to be the answer for electricity. So that corridor is going to be there. So, I mean, it's not an issue of really the cost of the corridor. It's upgrading it and the whole nine yards and getting the terminal and all that other stuff in place. That mm-hmm. that's really the issue.
Erica Spence, I just want to ask you real quickly, like Winter Park, you know, when SunRail was being developed throughout the kind of building the station phase and everything, it's kind of seen as like a model for how maybe other cities might sort of build SunRail into it, because in some ways it's a step back. That, you know, there's always been a train station in Winter Park. It's kind of built around
We were the original transit-oriented development
right,
back in
exactly.
1887.
Exactly. So now what I'm wondering is, are other cities along the Rhine, maybe maybe cities who are a part of Phase 2, are they sort of looking at Winter Park and saying, well, we could get some ideas for how this might work for us?
I think a lot of people are looking at Winter Park and what works, whether it's for the train or otherwise. We've got this beautiful Central Park. We've got a vibrant business area. We've got condos and other things within a reasonable distance. And then major employers nearby. So I think when you start to look at some of these other communities, maybe they've been always thought of as bedroom communities, but now mm-hmm. they're going to serve other purposes. Looking at Winter Park is an obvious thing to do.
David Porter, final thoughts on SunRail this far in and almost at the end of year one. Has it been a success so far?
I think it has been a success. I mean, there are always going to be the haters out there. I've had people say, oh, there's nobody riding the train. In fact, it was funny, on January 2nd, the day they had the records rail riders, there was some guy that he got passed by a train and there were only 7 people on the train. It's like, nice. Mm-hmm. But that's not true. And if you would go down to Church Street in the morning, like between 7 and 8:30 in the morning, and see the people getting off there. There are a lot of people who are not just riding. They're not joyriders. They're riding and going to work. So I think it's very successful.
Mm-hmm. Dan Tracy, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think that so far it has performed well. I'm not sure it's performed past expectations. They were hoping for 4,300 passengers, which is, quite honestly, is not a super ambitious goal. Mm-hmm. They hit 3,600 in December. But I think once the construction starts to kick in, I think you'll probably see them exceed that 4,300. At least that's their intent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And finally, Erica Spence, if weekend service is kind of critical or something that obviously Winter Park merchants would welcome, how far off do you think that is realistically?
I think if we attained weeknight service within the first 9 months of operation, I don't think that it's unrealistic to say that weekend would not be possible, in the next year. What if that's the goal for mm-hmm. 2015 is to make that happen? Whether we start getting creative with funding, we work with our government partners, and we just see what the demand really is and how we're going to make this happen. I think it's a logical next step.
I've been speaking to Erica Spence. She's the Senior Director of Marketing Communications for the Winter Park Chamber of Commerce. Erica, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
Also been joined by David Porter. He runs the online publication SunRailRiders.com. David, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
And Dan Tracy, a veteran transportation reporter for the Orlando Sentinel. Thank you for joining us, Dan.
You're welcome. Thank you.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at wmfe.org/intersection. There you can sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Our program producer is Brendan Byrne. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.